Roots.radio.com. Rootstock Radio is brought to you by Organic Valley.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Listen to Rootstock Radio every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on WEFT Community Radio. Coming up next is In the Know, a WEFT-produced public affairs show that highlights locally available resources. Stay with us after that for Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater at 7, Monday Night R&R at 8, live local music on WEFT Sessions at 10, and recorded local music on Champaign Local 901 at 11. We're going to get to some underwriting, and then we will get to In the Know.
WEFT is sponsored by Unity Church and Spiritual Center. Unity honors the universal truths in all religion and respects each individual's right to choose a spiritual path. In addition to the Sunday 11 a.m. worship service, Unity also offers weekly meditation and Reiki, a Course in Miracles study group, a spiritual circle group, Al-Anon, and AA meetings. The complete schedule can be viewed at cunity.org and is located at 1206 East Main in Urbana.
Good evening, CU community. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1. Welcome to In the Know, a public affairs show where social issues, trending topics, relevant research, and important perspectives are discussed so you, the listener, can be in the know. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the host and guest and not of WEFT Champaign. We're streaming live on my personal Facebook page. Listeners are welcome to submit comments and questions on Facebook live stream or via Twitter at Nature79. We're also going to try something a little new this evening. We are going to allow call-ins, of course, with the caveat, please behave if you call in. The number for the studio is 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. Tonight, we are going to be discussing a very important topic, which aren't they all? We're going to be discussing immigration. There's a lot of debate that's been going on, obviously, in the last couple of years. We know with our new administration, there's definitely even a hotter debate going on as far as immigration, what should be allowed, what technically shouldn't be allowed. And so I think there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to immigration and DACA, and we want to be able to, dispel some of those misconceptions, because it's important for listeners to understand what it means to be an immigrant here in the United States, the struggles that they have, and the reality of these immigrants being in our country. I have two guests in the studio. I'm going to have them introduce themselves, explain a little bit as far as the work that they do around immigration, and then we will get into the questions. We're going to go ahead and start over here.
Hi, I'm Thomas Garza. I'm the president of the CU Immigration Forum.
And I am Ricardo Diaz. I'm a member of the board at the Immigration Forum.
And so tell me a little bit about how you got involved in the work that you're doing. What brought you to get involved in this topic?
Actually, for me, it was about 15 years ago, and my main subject was very much the Dreamers. I knew several kids that were caught into the situation. The year was soon after 2001, so it must have been like two or three, in which I knew some kids. I knew the bill had gone up, and I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and there were some young people that qualified, and then one of them was our own local senator, Senator Specter, and then the other one, and I happened to know him, was Senator Hatch from Utah. Well, not know him, you know, we weren't buddies, but I had connections with him, and so I just felt like I could do something with it. We took some kids, we did a video with hiding their faces. At the time, it was very precarious to come out. And that just got me thinking, and eventually I left my regular job and I went to work in the community directly related with immigrants.
Okay, awesome.
I'm a second generation immigrant, so I pretty much grew up dealing with issues related to immigration in some way or another. And over time, I just decided I should branch out from that and try and do something to help people if I could, rather than just have it be an ad hoc sort of thing.
So, you know, again, kind of, you know, working on this idea of what it means to, you know, be an immigrant. I think some people may not even understand what that really means. They have these ideas of who an immigrant is, who an immigrant isn't. And then I think they start to assign rights accordingly. So when we're talking about an immigrant, who is considered an immigrant?
I guess anybody that comes from another country to here to live.
Well, there's two categories there. So if you're born in another country, you're foreign born, at least the way I think we're going to use it here.
Yeah.
There's the foreign born. Mm-hmm. And of the foreign born, some are coming to visit or in a temporary situation, and some are coming to immigrate here.
Mm-hmm.
So international students are usually of the first category, right? They have a non-immigrant visa. They're expected to come visit tourists, business people. There's a lot of people that come into the USA, millions a year, that are not immigrants. They're coming to visit, or they're coming for a particular business. They're coming to perform. They're coming to do an operation, whatever. So those are the non-immigrants. The immigrants are people that have some kind of intention of residing here for more than just a small period or a small task, project, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have, for example, an international student who knows is going to be here for a long period of time, but when their period is finished, they expect and the government expects for them to leave. So they have non-immigrant visas. There are other categories of foreign-born that end up here, sometimes through their intention and sometimes without. So sometimes you have people like refugees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the stuff happened in Haiti, they needed to go somewhere, and they did go to a lot of countries, and one of them was the U.S., and the U.S. said, we'll allow up to whatever, because they were fleeing a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's others that become immigrants that didn't necessarily had this as a final destination, but they happen. For example, people that were claiming asylum.
Mm-hmm.
It was not safe to be in their country. They want to get out, and so they go to a place. Sometimes it's a camp. Sometimes it's a holding place of whatever, because that country may or may not want them. And then they apply, and they may qualify to be here. So you have Syrians of that type, but you have a lot of Southeast Asians of that type that fled, I don't know, the Khmer Rouge, and then they went to a camp in Thailand, and from there they went to another camp, and somehow they got a tie to the U.S., and they applied here too. Or any other country that would take them, because the one thing they knew is going back home was no good, and staying in the camp was not a happy situation too.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a few of the categories of situations. You can say the latter two are immigrants because they're coming here to stay usually, but they didn't necessarily plan to come here.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those that are immigrants, you can come here legally, you can with permission, and you can come here without permission.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that if situation back home, there's a push-pull. They're being pushed out of their country for economic reasons, political reasons, weather reasons. They're being pushed out and they end up here. Or they can be pulled here. There's a better job here than there was back home. Or they have family here because their family isn't back home anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They all immigrated, so they joined their family. So there's a push-pull of those. So that's... Is that long enough?
No, yeah, that's good.
No, I mean, that provides a great... distinction as far as what we're talking about. I mean, I think it's great for people to understand that there are a myriad of reasons
mm-hmm.
for people to be here or the circumstances under which they are here, which again, I think some people, you're born here, you not necessarily take for granted your citizenship, but why you're here, how you're here, the circumstances under which you're living your day-to-day life, sometimes because it's just a given at that point, you don't realize there are so many other, details that have to be considered when you're looking at who's here, why they're here, and how you can support them.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to expand that a little bit about here, meaning probably U.S. or Illinois, in that immigrants and immigration is happening all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. is a country that receives a lot of immigrants, but so does the Russian Federation receive a lot of people. So does Germany. So does, Germany took in 1 million people last year. I mean, so there's a lot of places that people can't stay anymore for whatever reasons, and they have to go elsewhere. And then the last classification is, we don't use it here, but it happens in many other countries, there's internal migration. Right now, we in the U.S., we think of moving to Colorado as a regular thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because in our country, internal migration is not regulated. But we have had periods in which there was a lot of migration from the south to the north,
mm-hmm.
or from the Midwest to the West Coast because of the Dust Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And thousands of people leave a particular area, and that's a migration too. They mm-hmm. have to go start over. They, you know, the barriers might be different, but it is very much a migration because you are no longer in your homeland
mm-hmm.
anymore.
And that brings one point to mind that, if you don't mind, I'll make it
ahead,
to expand on what you said about people not understanding immigrants because, well, I'm born here, and so I just expect, you know, you have a certain expectations, is because of the size and the variety of environments in the U.S., if you don't like it where you are, as Ricardo was just saying, you can just move somewhere else. So if there's no job in your town, well, you can just move to another town that has a job or a different part of the country where things are better or something. There's enough space and variety and difference that you can make those kinds of moves, and there's nothing forcing you out of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
to somewhere else. But there are a lot of countries that are smaller than our states,
mm-hmm.
and they have lots of people packed into them, and the conditions are pretty much ubiquitous across the country. So if this country is in bad shape, it doesn't matter where you are in your country, you're in bad shape, you've got to get out. And I think that's what drives a lot of people to come here, and also drives a lot of people here not to understand why someone would be compelled to come here as opposed to just wanting to. Like, oh, I just want to go there. I don't think very many, I suppose some people come here because they just want to, but I think a lot of them come here because they feel like they have to.
Mm-hmm.
Or it is the only choice that makes sense for them, or something like that.
Yeah, you think of all the population of the Midwest and the West was very much a planned migration. They sold land very cheaply or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
I do family history quite a bit. And so in Mexico, after the U.S. Civil War, there were many people from the South that knew that when the Yankees came, they were going to either have to pay, suffer, or just be killed. So they went. One of the places they went to was Mexico,
mm-hmm.
Because they had to start over. Especially the landed class had lots of money that hadn't been spent in the war, and they needed to use it somewhere. Another instance of it is in one of the towns where my family comes from in northern Mexico, in Chihuahua. In 1918, during the great flu epidemic across the world, one of their towns got depopulated. A lot of people died. And they needed migrants. They needed workers. And so people, they looked around and they put out a call and invited people from this little town called Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they brought in people from that side of the border to populate Mexico for, uh-huh. you know. And in Chihuahua, we have, like here in Illinois, Mennonites.
Mm-hmm.
We have Mormons that fled for religious reasons, and they populated Chihuahua, and we have great apples and great cheese as a result of in Chihuahua. So the migration of people for economic, religious, for whatever reason is, for me, I've now come to understand, a natural phenomena that I would also take, and I do take because I'm not from Urbana-Champaign, when the opportunity came that drew us here.
Mm-hmm.
I migrated to Urbana.
Well, you see it happen. You know, we are a farming state. You see people who come up who help with farming. You mm-hmm. know, it's a seasonal thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, we see a need, and there's an appreciation for those who work our fields and work the farming industry that we have here. So I think, again, that's where that lens is very important, where people don't recognize this is that natural migration. This is a compelling mm-hmm. of people to come here for work, and the jobs are available. You know, I've had, you know, people that I've met who that's what brought them to Central Illinois. Not to say that we're not an amazing area, but, you know, we are a farming state. That is something that draws people here. And sure. So that is feeding into our economy, because not only do you have our economy being stimulated because we have our farming industry that's thriving because of workers, but they're also feeding back into our local economy because they're living here, they're spending money here, they're putting their children in school here. Mm-hmm. And so, again, those are the things that people tend to forget because they read these headlines and they tend to forget this is daily life. This is just a different form of daily life.
And perhaps the last part of that is we're watching it now and it feels all new and, it, you know, the politicians make it big.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not new. 100 years ago, the population of this area still was farming. It still brought lots of people, some to settle and some to not settle. They were moving elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And so the where they came from was different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, 100 years ago, there was a high population, a high percentage of the population was from those areas. Those people did settle. Some of those people did settle. They had kids here.
Mm-hmm.
You may be a descendant of one. I would bet many people in your listeners are descendants of them, but they're from here now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, they're actually 2-3 generations back. They may not have been from here, but now they are. And it feels new when other new people come. But 100 years ago, there were local people that also wondered why all these Irish, Hungarians, mm-hmm. Norwegians were arriving.
Mm-hmm.
They were just not from here. And you bet, they were treated badly too.
Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's you know, I'm not an immigrant, but I was adopted from Mexico. I was born in San Luis Potosí, and I was adopted and brought here. And the opportunity I have being a citizen here versus if I had remained in Mexico, I have a great gratitude for my parents doing that because, you know, again, I didn't have to live through that, but I definitely can see what the contrast would have been should I have stayed down there. And so, you know, when people say, you know, why would people want to be here and why would we want to support people here? You know, there were tons of stories that came out about, you know, who these dreamers are and how they have contributed to our country. You know, they talked about, you know, different natural disasters that we've had happen in the last years. And one of the people that they talked about was an emergency personnel who had responded across the country to different emergency situations. Somebody who came here, got their education, and hasn't only fed back into our economy, but look at the purpose they serve, saving the lives of people who are citizens here.
Mm-hmm.
So again, those are the things I want people to understand when they think of immigrants as the second class citizen. No, these are everyday people who are doing what we're doing every day. They just have a different status than us. And for me, it's always, how do you make that it easier to achieve the same status that I have versus pushing people outside of our borders, which again, if everything was great with just having our U.S. citizens being productive, I think our country would be in a different place. But I think we are supposed to be a melting pot and we're supposed to be having our borders open for all sorts of, like you said, all sorts of these different types of scenarios of people coming here, because you never know who's going to be, My daughter, she's 12. She was talking about, it's kind of funny what kids learn. When Trump was elected, she was very upset because she was worried about which of her friends would not be at school soon. And that was very upsetting to her as a fifth grader. And it was amazing to me that she had that type of appreciation right away. But she said, you know what, my friend, he likes science. And I bet you someday he's going to cure something. Again, you know, you gotta think of this. So, you know, I love being able to call them dreamers. I love being able to have a term that doesn't have such a derogatory connotation to it. You know, that we're all dreamers, I think. We all want to have something. So now that, you know, we use this term, do you think using the term dreamers helps with this cause of working towards improving immigration and immigration status? Or do you think it's just another buzzword for the headlines?
That's a tough one, because it is obviously, it's a positive term, as you mentioned, and it was one invented by pro-immigrants to describe what's good about a certain group. And I think that it's great as far as it goes, but the downside is it tends to divide immigrants into two groups, being the dreamers, who are almost deified in this way. They're just so positive and such so wonderful and have all these great things. And then everybody else. So it's like there's the ones who are guilty of coming here, breaking the law, and the ones who aren't guilty. Mm. And the ones who aren't guilty is like, oh, well, we love them. They're okay. The ones who are guilty, I mean, they all came here at the same time for the same reasons. It's just some had the ability to make decisions that gives them that guilt, and some didn't have that ability to make the decision, so they're somehow absolved of the guilt. But they're not different people.
Right.
I'm not saying this.
No, you're
well,
right. I have a friend who is, he's 36 years old. He came here about 18 years ago the first time, went back, took money, tried to start a business. He couldn't do it. Well, actually, NAFTA kicked in, and it went really south.
Yeah.
So then he came back. But he was telling me, he's undocumented, he was telling me, I didn't know it was illegal. Mm. If I knew I was going to cause this problem, maybe I could have done something. I would have looked another way. I needed, you know, I had two crops a year. It didn't feed my family. I needed to do something. Uh-huh. And heading north was what people were doing. So I did it. His wife had another occasion once opened up in a situation she was asked. So why did you come? And she went to the fridge. She opened it wide and she said, back home, I could either have food or an education for my girls.
Oh, wow.
In this country, and they lived, I mean, this studio, you know, what is it? I don't know, 100 square feet?
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what they lived on in Philadelphia. But she was very happy for her 100 square feet. She had a fridge and her kids went to school. She had both. That was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I just looked up what the DREAM Act because it started in 2001. It was first introduced, but it stands for, the longer title is Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act, DREAM Act, which, who could argue?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. DREAM is positive. This is also, the description of it is positive. And darn it, somehow in our beautiful country that has such great ideals and foundations, we can't even do that.
Well, and, you know, even looking at what's offered to U.S. citizens, what's offered to our college students and, you know, student loan debt, there's a flaw somewhere, obviously, when we have students who are walking out with an average of, you know, $26,000 to $30,000 worth of student debt at the end of a four-year degree, and that doesn't even guarantee them opportunity. And that's for a U.S. citizen. So there needs to be an across-the-board improvement somewhere. I think it's you know, systemic change. But
so
that's
the question
well.
Is, why do it to the foreign-born? Why give to the foreign-born debt? We can't, and if we can't give it to our U.S.-born kids, how do you answer that?
Yeah, those, I think, are the questions I've seen, you know, when we're talking about headlines and, you know, unpacking those, you know, who deserves what? Who deserves the first bite of the apple? I think that's where a lot of people talk about when, you know, you're looking at resources and stretching resources then. And then comes this argument of, well, we need to give it to the U.S. citizens who are documented, who are here, versus the ones who are here illegally. That usually is your kind of usual suspect when it comes to this debate on immigration. But again, sometimes I argue, what's so great about the resources that you're giving to the U.S. citizens? Sometimes those aren't that great.
I'll give you two extremes, though, because it just, the nonsense of it. If you come here legally with a student visa, you apply for a PhD program, I don't know one PhD student who is paying for their PhD tuition. That is, they get absorbed by a department, then they bring out a grant, and they have that person paid. For an international student, it works the same way. Once they get accepted, there is funding that they'll try to do, or their government sponsors them, but at the end of their period, they go home.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, we have paid for their doctorate degree, and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
We force them to leave. We don't want them here, as present law is. I find that kind of crazy. On the other hand, the undocumented are usually, in many cases not, but usually the ones that left their country for economic reasons or for whatever reason. They couldn't come here legally, so they came I find it ironic that people would argue against them taking jobs when they don't know English. They usually don't have education at the levels that are offered here for free, and they don't have a social security number. Every native-born student here can speak English, can have an education, and arguably you can go to all the way through college to Parkland for very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And since you're born, you also have a social security number, which gives you permission to work.
Mm-hmm.
With those three huge advantages, if you're threatened by somebody who doesn't have them and they're stealing your job, quote, I'm sorry, but you're scraping the bottom of the barrel with all kinds of advantages, and you're not cutting it. You need something else too. I'm not saying that the poor or the ones that don't take advantage of that, it's necessarily their fault. But to blame somebody who has even less of those three advantages is kind of crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think there's always arguments on both sides, and sometimes they seem very simplistic and very logical, and people still don't get it. They don't understand. They don't want to accept this idea that, again, kind of what we were talking about with this expectation, that word that you use, this expectation of I'm a U.S. citizen. This is the expectation that I get first bite of the apple, that I get this, that I get this, that I get this. I do think that, you know, we have the working poor. They are a level of citizenship where, again, there's arguments for, you know, extending resources to them. And there's also lots of arguments for not extending those resources. I think at the end of the day, we have to figure out better ways for our economy to thrive and recognize the people who are willing to be a part of that and make sure there's a place for everybody. Because at the end of the day, we could easily see ourselves back in 2008 again with the same economic crisis that we had then if we don't start figuring out better ways for all of the stakeholders and all of the players who are currently here to be able to feed into that economy. If they're here and they're willing to work and feed back in, that's my idea of crazy, is saying, no, we don't want you to feed into our economy.
Everybody can contribute something, but just to clear up, a dreamer, even in Illinois, because we do have, in a sense, a Dream Act for Illinois, for residents of Illinois that don't have, they're not fully documented. Going to the first bite of the apple, dreamers do not qualify for federal financial aid. Mm-hmm. In fact, filling out the FAFSA is a big deal because they can't, they don't have their parents' social security number, and so they don't qualify for tuition aid.
Mm-hmm.
They can't work without DACA. They cannot work. So at least, for example, University of Illinois, if that's the apple, they don't have anything but acceptance into the university. No mm-hmm. financial aid and no any way of working to pay for. So out of that apple, they're not taking any bites.
Mm-hmm.
They don't qualify for MAP grants. They don't qualify for X and Y and Z.
Mm-hmm.
The undocumented do not qualify for Medicare, welfare, unemployment insurance. I mean, you name the list of the safety net. They're not taking any bites of that apple either. It is no wonder then that over 90% of the undocumented have a job and two or three jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't work, you don't eat. If you mm-hmm. get sick, you don't eat. There's all these things that say, do they have the apple or are they growing the apple?
Mm-hmm. Right. No, those are all good points. I mean, I think, again, those are the misconceptions that people have that, well, this is, you know, like we were saying, this is the expectation of what I deserve. Well, maybe you're not seeing that what you deserve, other people aren't even able to touch. So you mentioned DACA. Some people, I think it's a term I think we hear all the time, but they're not 100% sure what it means. So what does DACA mean?
It's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. So it's essentially an attempt to sort of cobble together something like the DREAM Act that didn't require Congress to vote on it, basically. So it takes the same kind of pool of individuals that were covered by the DREAM Act. I think that's correct.
Much.
But just strictly defines just sort of a very limited subset of that group, saying, okay, you have to have this, 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 and this, and this, and then you are eligible for what is basically, what would you call it, a sort of a stay of execution in a way.
Mm.
It's just like, okay, we promise not to deport you for this period of time, or not to actively seek to deport you for this period of time, and you can get work authorization.
Yeah. So we defer action on your deportation.
Right.
Right? Because you arrived here as a child. Deferred
right.
action for childhood arrivals. On the other hand, that this, this, and that that they have to qualify for is your $500 fee.
Right.
Mm.
You can't have a criminal record. You must be working towards either going to school and improving your education or be in the military. That is, if you don't have a job, you're not going to school and you're not in the military, you don't qualify. Squeaky clean.
You have to have lived here for...
Yeah, you must have arrived here within a certain period of time before the age of 15 and not after X amount of years of before, I think, 2011, something like that. So the stipulations are quite high.
Mm-hmm.
Not every youth that came in uninspected qualifies. There are plenty of kids that grew up here. They feel themselves as American, but they did something stupid, and they don't qualify. Mm-hmm. So out of the 700 and some odd kids that have, or young people that have applied and qualified for DACA, there are plenty more locally here in town that we could not send their application in because they'd be in trouble if they did.
Mm.
Or they didn't have the money.
Mm. Yeah, that too. Too old, slightly too old, slightly too young. You know, if you just take this whole body of people and you just go, we want this group right here. That's what DACA was.
Huh? It's radio. You're making a box.
Oh, sorry.
We're live on TV.
Oh,
we're live too. Oh, okay, good. Excellent. I didn't realize that.
This is for the TV audience.
Okay.
No, that's a good clarification because, again, I think people see, they think that there's all these things that apply to every immigrant. I think that's the problem. And it's, again, these misconceptions of what every immigrant is eligible for or has access to. You know, there's just so many misconceptions. So, you know, we've heard that there's being changes to DACA. So what are those changes? What are we seeing proposed and rolling down from the Capitol?
The brief is that there was DACA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was very hard work. It was a concession by Obama because, admittedly, he said, Congress won't do anything. This is what we can do. Last September, was it? Our new president said, well, actually, no, he had somebody else say it.
Right.
We're canceling it effective March, which created, and there's a breathing room here if your application is wanting renewal, then you need to do it. That was in September. It created chaos for a lot of people. A lot of kids did not renew even though they qualified for probably the money. And then the president had also said, we're canceling DACA, let the Congress deal with it. It came up to a big fight because if it is going to be due in March, then either the law needs to be changed or there's going to be 700,000 people that are out of status.
Mm.
And we know who they are and they know where they live and they have a clean record. So the changes came in that there's been a proposal. It's been football with these kids, with these young people, back and forth politically for many other reasons. But what was interesting for me was when it went to court, because some states sued and said, you don't have the right to cancel DACA, the court said, that's true. The president doesn't have the right. And so right now in the courts, there's a gap because the court says they can't cancel it, so go ahead and renew if you can. So a lot of kids are renewing.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the president and his people are taking it to the Supreme Court. They're asking the Supreme Court to reconsider it to say they do have the right to suspend it. So right now, the suspension of DACA is being suspended by the court until a new suspension comes into play or there is a law. And that's where the the hostage situation is. Mm. We're going to hold these kids as part of the negotiations for a lot of money. And, you know, who's willing to go on either side? So DACA in itself, a well-intentioned program that really made a big difference on a lot of lives. We have over 20,000 school teachers that are DACA.
Wow.
Anyway, so right now DACA is suspended, but there's been a suspension of the suspension. And we'll know. We'll know soon because it's coming up next week again. In 2 weeks, they need to have decided.
Wow.
If the parties can get together on it. Otherwise, March will be really close, and it'll hit again in early March because that's what the suspension was supposed to come through, or the Supreme Court accepts that they're going to try the case, and we'll see, you know, courts move slowly, so they may just wait until the Supreme Court has said what to do.
Mm-hmm. There was an article that was posted in the Chicago Tribune that was different perspectives from, you know, different dreamers. One of the people who provided a testimony is a 28-year-old press manager. She came to the United States from Canada at age 6. And it says, people don't like to be undocumented. There's nothing great about that life. You're constantly living on the edge, having to worry if you know the knock on your door is coming from an officer who's going to detain and remove you. So for me, what DACA has meant is protection, and it's allowed me to thrive. It's been about opportunity. And so for me right now, the challenge is how to keep driving myself forward. How do you keep pushing for a permanent solution that allows us to stay?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's, again, I think this idea that some people in different parties think that those on welfare want to be on welfare forever. Those who are undocumented, they're okay with being here illegally. There's no interest in changing that status. Again, these misconceptions of people are okay with just how it is, when that's, you know, part of this concept of, you know, broadening that term dreamers mm-hmm. to the entire immigrant population, where the dream is to be a citizen. The dream is to be able to do everything you're doing every day, but do it where it's accepted, like you said, where you have a social security number, you have access to different resources that you currently don't have access to. You know, one of the parents in the local school district was talking to me about, you know, this concept of DACA, you know, being rescinded, and, you know, people just take for granted what that means for, like you said, how many thousands of children. And so, and I think that word that you used, hostage, is a very good word to use, because that's essentially what we're doing to these kids and their families. We're holding them hostage. As, like you said, there's this game of this ball being thrown back and forth of who's right on the hill and who's wrong, and how do we make this a law, and how do we get this, you know, somebody's agenda pushed through.
Well, I guess for me, because we already know what DACA is, we know their effect, we even know their economic impact. That is, if they were all deported because of the jobs that they've had and whatever else. So there are very few, if any, unknowns when it comes to the DACA presence, their DACA, their economic impact, their country, whatever else. Right now, what we hear in the news coming from the Congress that they can't get together on has nothing to do with DACA.
Mm.
The most ardent Republicans come from farm states like ours, mm-hmm. or situations in which they need people to keep working. So that to me is not unknown. The stuff that's going on and they can't get together on is, what else are they going to spend the money on?
Mm-hmm.
And they keep putting DACA up in the headlines as we can't get together on it. No, there's no not getting together on anything. They're already the cleanest, the most, whatever you want to put on, as an imposition on somebody to qualify. That's already there.
Mm-hmm.
What they're trying to negotiate is everything else. And mm-hmm. that includes $20 billion thrown at the border, or money for the VA hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
They're negotiating a bunch of other things, and they say they don't get together because of DACA. No, that's just one of the inflexible things, just like there are spending for the military. Some people don't want that cut at all. Well, there's one that says, and you can't kick the DACA kids out. We need to fix it. So for me, every time I hear DACA up in the news about the Congress, I have to laugh because they're not. The kids are hostage already. It's how much for them.
And it should be pointed out that the current offer from the White House, it includes legalization for the DACA kids, but they've also tacked on all
these
other things.
Didn't they include the wall in that?
They've included the wall. I think it was $25 billion for the wall. Wow. And roughly 50% reduction in legal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to say, hey, well, we'll take care of the DACA kids, but you have to just basically stab everybody else in the back. We're just utterly changing the way our country decides who can and can't come here. So it's a huge, huge, huge change that they're trying to make. So it's not just the mall. I could care less. If they want to put $100 billion
more
on
jobs.
That, that's fine.
Your money.
Somebody will do the work. We'll pay for it. It'll be totally stupid and a waste, and somebody will have to take it down. It's the other changes that are just completely unacceptable that they're just trying to slide in. And so when you're talking about holding for hostage, that is exactly what they're doing in this instance. They're holding
but these kids. But if this was a bank situation, you know, if they were robbing a bank and we're going to trade the kids, what's interesting to me is it's a hostage situation in which they say, okay, you can let the kids go, but their mom and their dad, out of here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're trading the young people for their parents.
Yep.
And that to me is true, ugly negotiation of hostages.
Mm-hmm.
You are trading some people for others. There shouldn't be a question of these young people. Everyone that looks at the qualification says, shoot, there's nothing else we can ask of them except, I don't know, and this is one that occurs to me for because we have a tradition of it, indentured servants.
Mm.
How about we just make them work for 12 more years with no benefits, and then once we have that, then we'll throw them a bone.
Yeah.
That's also in this proposal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We decided that slaves and indentured servants we should have no more. And that was over 150 years ago. And yet here it is as a proposal again.
Yeah, it says the plan comes with significant strings attached to the appeal to Republicans, including requirements to slash family sponsorship of immigrants, tighten border security, and provide billions of dollars in funding for a border wall with Mexico that Trump made one of his major campaign promises. But it says officials said the 1.8 million people could apply to become citizens in 10 to 12 years, providing they had jobs and did not commit crimes, which we've talked about here. It said Trump's plan would require Congress to set up a $25 billion trust fund to build the wall. I still just can't even get over that one.
Yeah.
It would allocate additional money to border guards and immigration judges, a figure that the Republican president pegged at $5 billion. And yeah, I mean, it just goes on and on to talk about what
how
sounds
much
like
do you want for these kids?
Right.
$25 billion? Oh, plus $5 billion?
Right.
Plus give us their parents? Plus, I mean, this is like, what kind of negotiation is this when you're negotiating for hostages in which you are paying billions of dollars for them? And this is the people's money.
Mm-hmm.
This is a negotiation for hostages, and give us their parents too, and their grandparents and their cousins and their brothers and sisters that didn't qualify for DACA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but do I then surrender the kids for in exchange for what they're asking for?
Right.
Negotiation is not viable when they're asking for things that you cannot give away. Do I give away my parents?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's been so many stories that have hit the news about families being separated right now.
Oh, sure.
And again, everyday citizens couldn't even fathom somebody coming into their house and saying, you and you come with me, you get to stay. You know, average citizens wouldn't even dream
we don't process
of that
it, right? That can't be.
Right.
We don't see that. If it riles people up, I do have an announcement to make because it was just announced this afternoon. There's going to be a rally this Saturday.
Okay.
You want to take care of it? Because I have my glasses.
I don't have my glasses.
You don't either?
Either, so
okay, so
it's
here
a big
we
blur
go.
To me.
I do have glasses.
Oh, you got glasses.
But
okay.
They sometimes hit. Okay, anyway. So the rally is this Saturday. It's going to be, oh, darn it, on this one, I don't see the times yet. We'll have to pull it out of the other one. There's a candlelight vigil this Wednesday, the 7th, That's a week from this Wednesday. The rally's supposed to be this Saturday. I'll get you the details in just a minute. But then the candlelight vigil is Wednesday, February 7th at 5 p.m. at the Alma Mater. So that one's student related. Oh, I should have printed both. But the other one is this Saturday, in which there's going to be a march here in downtown Champaign from WCIA over here to the News Gazette. I believe it's at noon. I'll clear that up in just a minute. There are people, regular U.S. citizens, that when they hear this stuff going on and say, it's not my country.
Mm.
I want to do something about it. These politicians cannot be doing this to us again, throwing out this junk and expecting for us to just sit down and take it. And that's one of the reasons for the rally on Saturday. It's just that, we're still carrying all the buckets of junk that's been going on, and this is one more to carry, and people are fed up. So,
well, it doesn't even make sense. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you're talking about, you know, so many, I guess I look at, you know, people aren't even trying to look at the perspective of what an immigrant goes through. That for me is always my first place when I talk about anything, is try to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, you know, whether it's a domestic violence, sexual assault survivor, if it's an immigrant, you know, all these different people, what possible obstacles do they have to face that you couldn't even fathom having to face on a day-to-day basis? Because you aren't being given access or afforded the right, or somebody else is determined, even if you do have a right, well, let's just ignore that. We've classified you as a second-class citizen. And so, again, you know, when we talked about sanctuary cities, and people were upset about, you know, well, you can't say that Urbana or Champaign is a sanctuary city. Do you want us to get in trouble? There were a lot of people who said, we'll worry about that later. The point is safety for these families. And yeah. I always love to hear people say safety, well-being first. We'll worry about the rest of it later. And I think some people rely on this idea that our court systems are very slow moving. So you can provide asylum and safety to people, and then we'll worry about the rest of the stuff later. You know, my daughter and her friends said, you know, they would provide safety for any of their friends. And they said, you know, what are they going to do, arrest us kids if we, you know, safeguard somebody? And I said, yeah, I wouldn't tempt our government if I were you.
Well, actually, I with my kids, as they talk, because I have a fourth grader, and the conversations that they've had over the past year has been,
you know, eye-opening.
And they're talking about it.
Yeah.
And now in the playground playing, you may not be here next year, so let's do this and let's do that. I mean, they're in a sense making plans because they've accepted our government. I have the info for Saturday.
Okay.
See you march in support of DACA, February 3rd, 11:30 to 12:30. Meet at WCIA on Neal Street, right south of Maine, is where it's at. And so... darn it, our representatives need to know that we don't accept this, and we need to do something about it.
So what are some other ways that, you know, if somebody's listening, or if somebody, because I know when it comes to a lot of social causes, people feel very overwhelmed. They feel like, how as one person can I make any type of difference? So for listeners who are saying, I get it, I hear exactly what they're saying tonight, and I agree with all of it, how do I help? How do I get involved? You know, there's rallies obviously showing support. There's contacting your elected officials and reminding them, hey, we need to support this group. But what are other ways for people to get involved? Because I'm all about the call to action. Don't just think about it. Don't just have a bleeding heart. Do something. So what are ways you would encourage people to get involved?
Vote.
Yay. Thank you for that.
First and foremost. A lot of people don't think, oh, it doesn't matter. The parties are all the same, blah, blah. You know, there's
right,
all this,
yeah,
this stuff that they say. But you can easily see, just looking at the current administration and the last administration, whether
yes,
you like or dislike what anybody did, there's a huge difference
mm-hmm,
right now between what's going on now and what was going on just a couple of years ago. Voting made that happen. Voting or not voting created this situation. So you can't say that voting doesn't make any difference, because it clearly, obviously,
very much does,
in every way that you can possibly think of, makes a difference. So that's the first thing you do.
And I want to make a plug right there for what, yeah, you said, because a lot of times we had a show just recently on my show about why the election process is important and how it affects you. But when you're talking about 20,000 teachers, that teacher that you may love who does an amazing job with your student, what if they are one of the next ones. So even if it doesn't affect you, it could affect your teacher, your neighbor, your coworker, whoever. Go ahead, sorry.
The other thing I was going to say is if you really want to make a difference, stop worrying about the big picture and start worrying about, you know, think globally but act locally is an expression.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what you can do in your amongst your friends, in your neighborhood, with people that you know. Start there.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a difference in someone's life if you just look around and see who needs what and try to do something about it.
But I don't know any DACAs, so why would I? How can I help them locally?
You can get involved with an organization of people that do know.
That's right. You can get better informed.
You can get better informed. You can listen to a radio show like this.
Well, for me, the hardest, because we try to put out our information often and try to keep people informed, is that you've got to act in some way, and that is talk. I can't, you know, up until recently in my office, every time an immigration issue came up, somehow in the office, and it was not mine because I worked for a state-related entity, and I knew it better, they started speaking up. You say, Ricardo, why are they doing that? I don't think they should be doing that to immigrants. And I was like, uh-huh. And then somebody else would join in the office. As far as I know, out of the 20 people in my office, only one keeps quiet. We probably already know why, but the other 18 people, because I'm one of the 20 and they know where I stand, the other 18 made it very uncomfortable for the other person to expound on some of the junk that gets floated, because they openly said, I don't think this should be happening. They took a stand enough to create a little bubble of space to be in solidarity with me at the beginning, but now they've created a large bubble in the office in which if somebody wants to talk and trash immigrants, they're already advocates because they already said, I'm on this side. You don't have to be political in the sense of I'm for this president or I'm not for that president. Just like every not-for-profit here, they can make a statement on the issue.
As long as
they don't put it as to a candidate, making a statement on an issue is fair game in all around us. It's protected by our Constitution.
And I think it is important. It's kind of along the same lines as see something, say something.
Yeah.
You know, you have people who, for instance, my boyfriend and I were talking about this, where he works in one of our smaller border towns on Champaign, which a lot of them tend to be predominantly white. And so the people who come in and, you know, he hears the discussions of the people in the office and of the clients who come in, and it's very much we have a very, very narrowed point of view on this when it comes to a whole lot of different reasons, including, you know, immigration. But the thing that we keep talking about is, but they're also sitting in a very privileged place where their day-to-day life is not threatened. Their livelihood is not threatened. Like you said, they have social security numbers. They have access to employment. They have access to education. They have access to anything, basically their entire lives. They have access to health care. You know, because he works there, he's in a place where it's hard for him to be able to speak up and say something. Mm-hmm. But for me, I've always said, you just let me know the time and the place to show up, and I'm happy to come and have that uncomfortable conversation. Because unless you educate people, unless you push them outside of a bubble they have been operating in for a very long time, they may never consider another perspective. Even if you push it out there and they completely push back on you, you did something.
Mm-hmm.
You are not part of the problem by inaction, because I've always said inaction is action. And so I agree with what you say. You know, have that conversation. That may be the very first thing you do, and that may be the only thing you do. But if it gets people to consider something else, it makes them see, okay, this idea that you think Trump is saving the world, but here's this issue of DACA. And like you're saying, it's really not about DACA. It's about everything else, but DACA is the scapegoat. You know, that's education. That's an important piece. And so I agree with that wholeheartedly. Talk.
Just as an example, there was a woman, a social worker, there was a rally coming up, and she really wanted to support it, and she wanted to put things at work to say that. But she knew better than just put the flyer in the kitchen, you know, in the common area. So she went to her boss. I'm not saying all bosses are like this. I'm not saying that things always have the same ending. But in this case, she was really nervous. You know, she has as clients all kinds of immigrants, and she said, I feel like I need to tell somebody, and my coworkers are it. So she took the flyer, and she went to her boss to ask permission to post it. And it's really hard to recall it, because she said, and my boss looked at me, and I said, that's it. And her boss told her, I am so happy that you, as a worker, can put your clients to this level and want to advocate for them.
Advocate, yeah.
And she has since moved on, but for us, that was a particular moment in which she said, yes, it doesn't have to be as bad as we think it. But it doesn't affect us is not true. Mm-hmm. Everybody in Champaign County is affected. Out of 24,000 foreign-born in this county, they generate an economic impact of over $3 billion. We're about to put the numbers out. We have a national outfit pulling together. That was just for last year. 2016.
Mm-hmm.
In April, we'll be releasing the whole 5-year impact. But I think that kind of money probably impacts all of us in one way or the other.
No, it does. Yeah, thank you guys for being on the show tonight. This is one of many conversations we're going to have about immigration, because obviously this is not a topic that's going away anytime soon, no matter what happens in March. So thank you for sharing amazing information. Again, I hope people are a little bit more educated when it comes to the topic of immigration. And thanks to the guests in the studio for lending their voice to the topic. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to In the Know on WEFT 90.1 Champaign. Tonight's show will be archived on Radio Free America, WEF.org, and my personal Facebook page, Sherry Williamson. Next week, we are going to be talking about IEPs, helping people to understand that whole crazy world when it comes to advocating again for your students. But yeah, thanks guys for being in the studio and having this discussion. We will be talking about it again very soon.
Dreamers keep on dreaming, never lose hope. Times will get better, we won't give up. We're coming out, coming out, coming out of the shadows. We're showing up, we're not afraid, we're here to stay, here to stay. Dreamers, keep on fighting, lift up your voice, our generation can change the world. We're coming out, coming out of the shadows. Showing up, we're not afraid, we're here to stay, here to stay. Oh, stay, I'm here to stay. Oh, I'm here to stay, here to stay. The moment is here, the day is now. So like a fire, keep the dream alive. Keep it alive. This country is our land. This country is our home. This dream is like fire in my bones. We are not going anywhere. This is where we belong. I'm coming out, coming out, coming out of the shadows. I'm showing up, I'm showing up. I'm not afraid. I'm here to stay. Here to stay.